Welcome everyone to another episode of the Retro Rides Cup podcast. Here we have Chaz.
And I'm Tommy Overdrive.
And how's it been, Tom?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. It's another week has passed, but it's been a pretty eventful one. I have just got myself a Retro Daily.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, well, I thought after our discussions the other week about my ever-expanding fleet and how one of them wasn't particularly retro or exciting, I'd chop it all in. So I've sold my Subaru Impreza, which, to recap, was far too nice to drive in the middle of winter, despite the fact that it was four-wheel drive. So I got a pretty healthy sale for it through eBay, of all places.
Actually, get what you wanted?
I did. I got what I wanted. Yeah, I'll be up front. It sold for $7,500.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, that's a car I pulled out of field for just over a grand. But I will be open. There was about $5,000 in it by the time I was finished. But
you disgusting profiteer! You're ruining what you know what Retro Ride stands for. You know.
let me just remind everybody of Wheeler Dealers, where nobody seems to account for poor Ed China's labour.
And this is the thing. I jest with you about, you know, the fact that you've sold a car worth £1,000 for $7,000. But one, that's the way it goes, and two, the time investment, I don't think anybody realises, to actually do those little bits, you know, those couple of bulbs you've changed, a full service, you know, doing dampers and stuff, you name it, it all adds up, and it is a big time investment, especially when it's not your sole project.
Absolutely. And well, the interesting thing about it was I still sold it with guilt because of that little bump that I gave myself off the top of it. I actually sat for a good 24 hours sweating with imposter syndrome, thinking this guy's going to come back and say absolutely not. But 24 hours later, I got a picture. The guy put new wheels on it, took the fancy picture, sent me. Oh, I'm really happy with it. I was like, wow, this is apparently what car dealers must feel like.
But I think also it shows an evolving market, but we'll be getting to that later on in this podcast as well, in terms of prices. And I'm sure, because I know I saw a few things, and with what we're going to cover later in the podcast, and I'm sure you saw a couple of things and thought, what, really? They go for that much?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, this is it. So I'd actually lined up an idea because I, at the time we were discussing what to cover in this, I had some options for a Retro Daily. Of course, the weekend has just passed and I rolled the dice on what is an MB Mazda MX-5.
Very nice. Is an MB first generation or an MBFL?
So for those who don't know, the NA MX-5 is the one with the pop-up lights. The NB is the one that looks like Lightning McQueen, but in miniature form. So what I have is the first generation. So it's on an R-Reg, very, very base stock-looking model, apart from a couple of nardy bits. The 2.5, as it's known in the trade, is the one where it looks a wee bit sleek in the front, but it's fundamentally still the same Mazda-derived lump, same chassis that all the MBs come with.
In some ways, it's actually the hidden gem of the lot, because you get your variable cam timing, which no NAs ever came with, and you get your locker, which only the Unus is tended to come with, and you also get a 6-speed gearbox.
Well, yeah, so the interesting part is I've got none of that.
Ah!
Because awesome. I've bought an R-Reg, which means it comes with the 1.8 that the Mark 1 came with, and hee-haw else, it doesn't have the VVTi, it doesn't have the immobilizer that the VVTi is what it came with, and it doesn't have the 6-speed box or a locker. But what it does have is a complete and utter absence of rust.
Nice.
And everyone's going to be like, ah, mate, there'll be somewhere. No, no, no.
I was going to say, I think you're lying yourself now, you know. A non-rusty MB, do they exist? Chassis legs are like almost disintegrating as you say the word chassis leg.
Well, interestingly, yes. So if anyone is familiar with the Tools and Track channel, they'll be like, this seems very familiar, because I did buy a 2.5 in red and it wouldn't leave the ground when I put it in the two-poster ramp. But that was the sort of crux of me going, right, I've had enough of this. I want to find a really clean one. So the aim is going to be make something really nice out of the two that I've got there. So we've already started chipping over some of the nicer things from the 2.5 into it. I dare say the locker will follow soon enough, but I'm still rolling the dice on the VVTi. I don't know if that's going to be worth the bother.
That's fair enough.
But yeah, that's so I've had a very, very eventful week. What about yourself?
Mine's been eventful, but not necessarily with myself. So this weekend, I went in with thinking I'm going to do a couple of things on the Mercedes. It's got a bit of a minor idling problem. It's K-Jetronic, which means for people saying, oh, old retro stuff's easy to fix. Yeah, try fixing K-Jetronic with a idle control valve. No codes, no nothing, no hope. there are definitely not memes of people hanging themselves as soon as you mention the letters and numbers M102. M102, for those wondering, is the engine code of the harmonica engine, as some people call it. The four banger that was used in Mercedes 2 liters and 2.3s from about the 123 generation onwards. So the 123 had it, the 124 had it. I think the 190E may have had it as well. I could be wrong there, and I'm sure I'll be corrected.
So I've got to ask, why is it called the harmonica?
I don't know. It's just something I heard it was called. I think it's just because it makes a lot of noise and it doesn't really go that fast anywhere. It's not a fast car. 135 brake horsepower through a slushmatic, albeit being a touring model that I've got, it does have a shorter diff. So you do gain back a bit of acceleration because obviously with the self-leveling suspension, it's designed for going quickly. But that does remind me of one thing I did do over the weekend. Listeners here, you'll come to realise I do tend to forget a couple of things at times. maybe it's a side effect of COVID or something, I don't know, or it just could just be how busy I am. I went to go and see Bruce Holder at the Cafe and Machine this weekend because it was his birthday. For those who don't know Bruce, he was Mystery Machine on Retro Rides, he still is. And he is the one who did a very famous thread called If Only You Were Closer.
I remember that.
Yes. So, yep, I saw him. That was quite a good deal. Yeah, very enjoyable. He got to see the 124 in all of its glory, all polished up. Oh, I cleaned the 124. That's one other thing I did. So, yeah, I was going to sort out the idling on the 124. I've checked a couple of things, and I think I've admitted that, actually, I'll have to live with it. It's not too bad. It's what most of them do. It's fine. It just idles at 1,200 RPM, which is a little annoying, but...
Especially in an automatic when you've got creep involved, but...
Yes.
But so, what... on the subject of if only you were a little closer, any road trips on your end?
Yes. So a couple of people have seen me on the forum will have noticed that I've been going with a chap called Dick Dastardly on the forum, who's a chap called Rich, who he owned a DR30 Skyline. We may get him on the podcast one day to discuss things. But he's been a massive golf fan all the way from back in the day, and he's gone back to his roots. So I think I told you before, went with him about a month ago to go and pick up a Mark II Golf G60 from Morpeth.
Yep.
This week, he picked up two cars, of which I was involved. I didn't encourage him. I wasn't buying or selling either way, but, you know, just went with him. So he went to go and look at a Mark II Golf GTI 8-valve, 3-door,
nice.
Big bumper, silver with some 5-spoke wheels. I'm not going to pretend I know what the models are, but they're a model of wheel I've seen on Jettas and Golfs over many years. Nice rally interior. And he also bought a nice looking Corrado as well, a G60 Ooh, Corrado.
I do like a Corrado, I'm not going to lie.
It's quite a cool looking thing, actually. And it holds the road really well. It looks quite something going down. It's interesting. There's a car that you didn't think would date, but it does have that classic look about it now. You know, VW don't make cars that look like that anymore. You park that next to a Scirocco. You know, for example, when I mean a Scirocco, I mean a 10s or late naughty Scirocco.
Yeah.
You know, it looks a world apart, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're almost timeless. They were the old Corrado, the old Scirocco was just really dated by comparison when the Corrado came out. And it's just, I think it was because it was so revolutionary a design that it's like the TT that way, whereby it just doesn't seem to age. It always looks fresh and unique.
I think you're right there, you know, because when it came to 1999 to 91, yes, the Golf looked something, but the Mark III Golf was a bit meh after the Mark II. Very capable car, you know, especially in Mark III, especially in the VR6 form.
Yeah,
lovely thing. But I think the Corrado just was like, hang on, is that a VW? I mean, obviously Karmann made them, so that probably did something regarding the styling. But yeah, they are a timeless looking car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't mind one. So any chance to drive either of them back for the man, or was it?
No, I was in my ever faithful E91 325D touring BMW.
Nice. There's worse places to spend your time, let's be honest.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I enjoyed swinging it back around the roads, you know, nice rear-wheel drive, fairly competent, nice kind of harmonious feeling car. I like that car more than I should.
Well, I think the two of us have just proven there is no such thing as if only you were a little bit closer, because my MX-5 came from Wolverhampton.
Which sounds quite close to some people, but just bear in mind, Tommy here, he is from deepest, darkest Scotland. That or sunny Scotland.
It is not a fake accent.
Exactly. He has not moved down south or nothing. You know, he has not put this on, put his accent on just for this show. No, he is genuinely from, yeah, near the Glasgow area. So, yeah, he's a long, long, long way away. You know, that's like me going to, I don't know, Cornwall to go and buy a car, for example, with me being based in the West Midlands near Coventry.
Yeah, but nobody would go to Cornwall. That's a silly idea.
No, definitely not.
But definitely on that not. Spirit of going a little bit extra to go and find a car, the recent purchase of a retro daily got me thinking, and it got you thinking as well. We set ourselves a little challenge, and we haven't actually really discussed this until now. We have dug out, what was the criteria actually, now that I think about it, Chaz?
We set a criteria which was as follows. And so if we're doing 1, 2, 3, and 4, number one, 5K retro daily. Okay. Number two is a choice of either a left field choice or a shrewd investment. Third one is money, no object. And if we get some time, although I may cut this out with the editing through the powers of sound magic, we'll see if we can squeeze in a future retro choice.
Okay. Right. Well, I'll tell you what, in that case, given that I have just completely ruined myself by buying what I was lining up for my retro daily, I've got a backup plan. So for me, I was hunting as a, well, if I couldn't find a really clean rust-free MX-5, which is a very strong possibility, my backup was also Japanese, a late 90s car, because if it's going to be a daily, you really have to have something that's going to daily. It's got to be somewhat mildly interesting with a little bit of pep, and it's got to be different.
So, I agree. I can roll with that. Definitely.
Only just within the retro remit, which is pre-2000, my choice was currently still sitting on eBay, located in Hook in the United Kingdom. It is a 1999 Toyota Corolla 1.6 SR. Now, the reason why I chose this is, number one, it's black. I love black cars. Number two, 45,000 miles in the clock, which for a 1999 car, is absolutely nothing. It is more or less stock. You definitely don't see many of them around. But best of all, it is fuck ugly.
Yeah,
it's the
beauty is in the eye of the beholder, though. And and life is too short for boring looking cars.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we'll drop a link in the comments for this, but it is the round fried head, like horrible one that they didn't even have much success with the rallying. But it's just so clean, and it's such a left field. I reckon you could turn up anywhere in this and folk would still look, because you just do not see these cars anymore.
It's the bug eyes in the front, isn't it, really?
That's the one, yeah.
Which you just don't really see with other cars. I mean, I was just thinking of what other cars had like bug eyes in the front, and the only ones that really spring to mind are the Ford Scorpio.
Yeah.
But if we're trying to rescue the situation that's had, the W210 Mercedes, I mean, I think time has actually been kinder to that than we realised.
It really has, actually. I was thinking about those the other day. In fact, I was struggling so hard to find the retro dealers about to come wrestle your Mercedes off you, but luckily that never came to it. But those are the big E-classes are actually, yeah, they've aged a lot better than a lot of folk thought they would.
It's just a shame that there can be a bit of a gamble to buy. I think the four people that I know who have bought one, two of them have had significant problems. Generally, the spring purchase collapsing on them, which on the plus side means you get an instant luring job. So you will win it down with the scene crowd. Minor downside is basically you do lose, or ground clearance and any kind of ride comfort.
Or handling, or safety for that matter. So just to round up on mine, I only just caught this in. The classified ad price was $4,999. So I don't have anything left in the budget for wiggle room, but that was my backup. So beat that.
Oh, I think I don't think I can. I mean, I was looking at estates, because I think you can guess from the two of the three cars that I own, they are estates. I'm sure if BMW did an E46 M3 estate, I might have had an estate. but the problem is estates are dear, and I don't know, hatchbacks aren't really my thing. So I was looking at Mercs, and I thought, I've had an E320 before, and I might consider one again, but they are old, they are getting a bit rusty and stuff, and also the 320s, they are very juicy on fuel, as I happen to know from personal experience, and they're not £5,000 anymore for a nice one. No. So that was immediately off the table. The 230 with the harmonica engine, yeah, it's a nice thing, but I don't know, I want something a bit more special for a daily. I know that's, I'm not trying to say that the 230 TE is not special, but you want something with a bit of meat, as you were saying, you know, something which has got a bit of go, which, you know, can help you clear the, you know, clear the traffic and so on, and you know, really enjoy. So I've gone, like yourself, quite worryingly, towards the very edge of the noughties. So I went back to basically what I know and what I possibly quietly love. I don't think I love them. I just think I think they're a competent car. Right, enough with the build up. So I chose a early 2000 Mark II Ford Mondeo ST200 estate.
Now that is a very, very left field choice. Talk us through that.
So I've had loads of Mondeos because I used to drive for a living, and yeah, we did hundreds of thousands of miles in them. Our favourites were the 3 litre V6s. Obviously, yeah, I don't think for the retro challenge, Mark III quite cuts it. I mean, granted, the oldest Mark III is now 22 years old. You could argue it's a classic, but I don't know, it just doesn't quite have that for me. But the ST24, I think, you know, people look at them, they go, yeah, they're all right. And the ST200 is quite a special thing. And I don't know of anybody who's had an ST200 estate who's been disappointed. If anything, they've been gutted to get rid of them.
Yeah, you say that. So I really struggled when you first sent it over. I thought, oh, it's a bit odd. But the more I look at it, the more I'm like, I can see where you're coming from. It's got the anthracite wheels. It's in Ford Imperial Blue. And it's another one of these cars that when it first came out, I really struggled with. But looking at the pictures, though, that front end is aged very well.
It has. I was never a Mark II fan, for what it's worth. Mark IIs weren't ever my bag. But, you look at a Mark I or Mark II Mondeo inside now. They do look 90s American inside, basically, because effectively that's what they were. You know, Ford built the Mondeo to basically conquer all markets back in the day.
Interesting
podcast.
Were they Taunuses in America?
They were briefly the Taunus, but I think they then reverted them back to the Mondeo, because I think the idea was, instead of having five different brands across the world, you would knock them all out with one, because bear in mind, the Sierra was called the Sierra. Mm-hmm. The Granada Mark II, I think, yeah, it wasn't the Mark III, sorry. The Mark III Granada was the Granada in the UK, but it was a Scorpio in Europe. Mm-hmm. Scorpio for us was only reserved for...
The special flagship version,
whereas the Europeans, it was just called the Scorpio. Mm-hmm. And a bit like the Vectra, you know, if we tried to stray too far off track, you know, they kept the Cavalier name here. Maybe they just knew us Brits didn't like change. So I think Ford basically went to hell with trying to cater for audiences. One name for one car, tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it was between that and another car, which I think I told you about. But I think the ST200 wins the retro daily choice, because it is that bit older in this case.
It's a very strong contender. I don't know if we're ever going to have comments, but I wonder what the general consensus would be for the best pick out of the two of those.
It's surprising what £5,000 gets you, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the other surprise for me was, this is Karen Classic you found this on, which is not a place famed for having cheap examples of cars, but it looks really clean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For £5,000 anyway.
Oh, God, yes. No, I was going to say, I mean, I think my ST220, I suppose maybe that's one reason that swung me. I do miss that car a bit more than I think. And people who went in it were like, well, there's only one day, they go, actually, it's all right. It's got a nice, smooth engine. You know, it can oversteer on demand and stuff. You know, it's a fun car. You know, it feels like the whole chassis is connected nicely. But yeah, that was my choice.
A good effort. But listen, £5,000, that's dull. We all have our dailies. What would be the money no object one? Now, this actually gave me a right challenge, because I'm a person that always has realistic goals. I mean, as I've discussed before, I've had over 150 cars, so I know what to go and get. So the chances of dreaming of something that's just complete airy-fairy pie-in-the-sky stuff doesn't really apply to me because there's no point. So to have that actual remit and be told you need to actually have a justification for it, it was a proper struggle. I'm not a supercar guy. I'll say that right now. I don't really dig Ferraris. I find Lamborghinis to be really chintzy. The fragility of them all scares me as well, because I'm a guy who likes the spanners, so the idea of really highly strong Italian engines scare me. But there is absolutely no doubt, if money is no object, that Italy really does the proper cars, the real lust wagons. So for me, the classic styling, the 70s, that's where it was all at. If I could have been a 70s cop, I'd have grown the moustache, but sadly I was born in the wrong era. So for me, it would have to be Italy, and I'd have to go for a Di Tommaso Pantera.
Very nice. I think I've seen the one that you've got, and that's actually the one that you've picked. And it's got some nice wheels on it. I don't know if they're standard or if they're reproduction things look a bit larger.
I don't know.
It looks cool, though.
It really does. You'd struggle these days to find any Di Tommaso Panteras because they really are coveted items. I mean, this one, for example, sitting at £160,000 on a website called Classic Trader. So the reason that I picked this one, it's one of the earlier ones. So it doesn't, much like Lamborghini, Di Tommaso did start bolting things onto their equivalent Countach and really diluted it quite a bit. This guy doesn't have the silly whale and tail spoiler thing in the back. It doesn't have the arches, but it does have nice period wheels with a bit of dish. But the real reason why I love the Pantera is it doesn't have that aforementioned fragility. It's got a big thumping V8 in the back, straight out the Ford factory. So some of the best sounding rumps that you can get. And they just, the presence they've got in real life is just awe-inspiring.
I think it is. I think that's a really solid pick. And I think the other nice thing is, if you want to modify them, you don't have to be worried about modifying them and ruining any originality, because they are mostly American. You know, they've got that American V8. You want to chuck on a set of throttle bodies, you can do that. You want to put a tunnel ram on, you can do that. I mean, if Roadkill bought a supercar, you almost think that's the supercar they would buy.
Exactly. Sadly, it's just completely out the budget for everyone. So that is why it's my money, no object. But what about yourself?
Oh, mine was definitely a money, no object. And I think basically a money, no object and shaking me, you know, forever upside down in my life to try and empty out my pockets even more. My budget was somehow a little bit higher, but recently I've been thinking back to what car, if I was going to get a dream car, what would you get? Because as car guys, we don't really have dream cars, but I keep coming back to this one, even from when I was a little kid, when I was about 10, 11 years old. I chose a 50s Mercedes 300 SL Gullwing.
Ah, yeah, this is an absolute beauty of a car. So talk us through the logic with this.
Okay, so if I ever won the Euro Millions or, you know, a rollover jackpot, I probably would be stupid enough to throw away, you know, a 20th of my money on one. But for me, it's just what the cars represent. I think they just look absolutely gorgeous. They look fantastic. You know, the curves are quite something. And you can't believe something that looks like that came out of the 50s. It just boggles a mind. And they're so advanced for the age. You know, they've got direct fuel injection, which, apart from the Messerschmitt, it's technology that didn't really hit cars until the 90s or noughties, basically.
Yeah, they were tremendously advanced for the 50s, but the
backwards
biggest
as well though.
Yeah, but the biggest advanced thing, which if people don't know what we're talking about, is the doors.
Oh yes.
So these are similar to, if most will know what the DeLorean is because of Back to the Future, but this is one of the first car ever examples I think that ever came with Gullwing doors, and they're just absolutely beautiful.
Oh God, they are, and I think me having a 108 Mercedes, you know, bear in mind I've had. Although I'm known more recently for buying naughty stuff, you know, I joined Retro Rides buying basically British Leyland. You know, I was basically Mr. British Leyland. You know, I like my twigs in my pint and so on. So to go to, don't get me wrong, British Leyland stuff is still quite cool in my eyes anyway. But to go from something like a Triumph Stag or like an MGB or even an E-Type to like a Mercedes 108, the difference in quality is just unbelievable. I mean, that 108 was, it felt like everything was sewn from granite. Granted, it was a bit trickier to work on than all of the counterparts or BMC counterparts, but it was such a solid car. And that's drawn me back a little bit to the Mercedes.
Yeah, no, I've had a few myself, and you're absolutely bob on. The quality in Mercs, the older Mercs, we'll stipulate, is just second to none. But the choice you've made, so this is an unusual one. It's black. It's also POA, so Christ only knows what the actual cost would be.
I've taken a look. About between 1 and 2 million tends to get you into the seat of one.
But I think you actually win this round. I'm not even going to dispute, because the very first model car I ever bought was this.
Well, so, that's something we got in common there. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. My dad was worked very hard, and the first nice car he ever got was a 123 Merc 230. So when you're all of 8 years old, you know, the car that your dad has is the brand that you affiliate the most with. And for me, the most beautiful Merc that ever existed at that point was this. So yeah, I fully agree. Stunning car.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So that does bring us on to a middle ground, though, because God, if you'd had the sense to buy one of those back in the day, you'd be laughing. But what would you reckon would be the thing to buy now that could possibly be worth a fortune in days to come?
Okay, I think we've got to be very careful here in terms of what we choose. I was gonna say an M3 CSL, but one, I've got an M3, and two, CSLs are now, they've gone up a lot more than even I bargained for. Yeah. So they're off the table. Will they go up? Yes, but I don't think it's relevant for this challenge. So I was thinking something like a Golf R32 Mark IV. A few reasons for that. So of course, 90 stuff, that's got up. Will it probably go up? Maybe, maybe not. Can people get into it? That's a funny one for the desirable stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. Naughty stuff, I'm going to say that's kind of where the naughty stuff was. The people who buy the naughty stuff are, you know, the younger people who are looking to keep them. And of course, the people who maybe not now coming into money with the way the world is, but certainly in a couple of years' time, there certainly will be.
Yeah.
So, but it's going to have to also be, it can't be diesel, because
nobody's ever going to accept it.
But also, with all these ULEZ zones popping up everywhere, you won't be able to drive them in without, you know, giving somebody a tenner a day. It's got to have a nice sound, and it's got to be something that's universally liked. I don't know. I think the fast forwards of that time, I don't think they quite cut it. Focus RS, quite something. Yes, it will go up, but I don't think it's it. I think the Golf R32 has that. You know, everyone loves Golfs. Maybe I'm going to hang around with Richard too long.
It's a beautiful sounding engine. There's no dispute in that.
That's the thing. The engine note is what it's remembered for. It's got the heritage of having a VR6 engine. I doubt we'll ever see, you know, a thirsty, underpowered, but gorgeous sounding VR6 engine again in our lifetimes anyway. And yeah, they've got that classic. They're still retaining that classical Golf look. I think the Mark IV was actually one of the better looking cars. I think, you know, the Mark V is a better car, but it lost it. I think the Mark IV kept that classicness. It was like it's like the car the Mark III always should have been.
Yeah. I think, to be fair as well, the Mark IV R32 is about the only nice Mark IV Golf they did. But that's
you don't want to be upsetting the Golf people there.
No, God forbid.
I'm with you though.
Yeah. I'm with you though. That's it. Yeah. Well, do you know, interesting point. So I actually had to have a think about this challenge as well. And one of the ones that I picked out was, as near as damn it, the same thing. It was the Audi TT. And it was the 3.2 V6. The exact same engine, almost the same floor plan, but just it's got that Bauhaus styling that I reckon is going to make it just a cult classic. So what I'm going to do in that instance, seeing as how we're a bit too close, what was your budget for the 32 Golf?
I think the one I picked was about 10 grand, wasn't it?
10 grand, right. Okay, so I actually have a backup future investment for 10 grand, but this is going to need a bit of a brave pill, if I'm being honest. Now, this one's I found it on eBay, and I did it purely doing the toilet browse when I'm like, how mental can we go with this? This is £8,000. So for a kickoff, you would be absolutely bananas to have a go on it. But
or a legend.
Or a legend, depending on how capable and brave you really are. So what I found for, and I'll say it again, £8,000, an Aston Martin DB7.
Where did you find an Aston Martin DB7 for $8,000?
Well, there's terms and conditions that come with this one, Chaz, right? So for a start, it's the 3.2 auto. So if you don't know the Aston Martin DB7, folk love them because big Aston Martin V12, blah, blah, blah. This isn't. So the 3.2 was Aston's first foray before they really kind of got the steam behind the V12. So it's a straight six, more or less looks identical to a Jag lump under the bonnet.
It's actually the Jag AJ16 lump. What's
There you go.
interesting is it is a 3.2, but Jag went with the 40 supercharged. This is a 3.2, which is interesting. But yeah, it's the same lump,
Same lump,
more or
yeah,
less.
but outside it's got the, and I don't want to call it British Racing Green because, well, we could get into this. There is no British Racing Green. That's not actually a colour, but it's green, and for a British sports car, it should be. It has what looks like the correct wheels for Aston Martins. By all accounts, you read the ad and you think, God, I mean, that must be just because it's a 3.2. What could possibly go wrong? Until you get to the mileage. So, I don't know how reliable Aston Martins are for putting big miles, but 195,000 miles.
Oh yes, but on the other hand, it's one of those of were they longish motorway trips? Has it been abroad and stuff?
Who
It's one
knows?
of those. And bear in mind, we keep thinking these are 10-year-old cars. I mean, that's what, 25 years old or so, which is scary.
1995, yeah. I mean, it's definitely in the
27
class
years old, yeah.
category. Yeah. But it's just a simply gorgeous looking big thing. And I just wish in my little mind, I'm like, that's rust free, it's drama free, it's been owned by a nice person. In reality, it'll be none of those things. But it's £8,000 for an Aston Martin. On
I
eBay, if you
think.
search for it, you'll find that.
Oh yes, my backup choice, which I discounted quickly because it was a diesel, even though you could argue then it would be more favoured. But I think people would need many brave pills to buy them. I think it'd make your Aston look like a more sensible choice.
Go
Was the
on.
Citroën C6?
Right, that is very, very left field. So talk me through this one.
My mate's got a Citroën DS21 EFI Palace. Beautiful ride quality. I like the CX, and if you look at CX prices, they've gone up. DS prices, they've gone well into the hills in terms of what's getting a nice one now for reasonable money. And the C6, it's the last true big Citroën, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks very different. It's got the hydropneumatic suspension. It's got the bonkers rear screen that curves inwards because it can curve inwards, and it's just something that's just gorgeous and awesome. You just don't see cars like that anymore. But on the other hand, yes, if we put it another way, those 2.7s, they're not known for snapping cranks, and it's French and electrical. So, as I said, it'll make your Aston look more reliable, even though your Aston's a very cheap one and a leggy
Yeah.
one. So it just started to wane. But then again, that can make the cars the riskier purchases. I mean, look, you look at Jensens, they went up in value because people were scared of how risky they could be.
Well, that's it. I mean, don't get me wrong, Genesis have their own foibles, but to look at this, so it's advertised on Auto Trader at the moment. It's sitting at £5,000, so could actually apply to a number of things. We'll give it a pass because it's technically a 2008, but it is so left field and unique. It does apply in this instance. As you say, you're right. It's the last of those proper Gallic Citroens, the ones that are just quintessentially French styled, total left field oddball. I don't know enough about them to say if that a diesel V6 and a 2.7 variety is a wise idea, but it definitely
I've
has a
seen
charm.
around at my friend's yard. I've definitely not seen a couple of Land Rover Discovery 4s with snapped cranks. Definitely not. Definitely not. I have. But no, for me, I thought it's a bit too new for this thing. But I think it wins it back by the fact that it is such a left field choice. But yeah, as I said, it just didn't quite make the cut in this instance.
It's a shame as well. Some food for thought, and in future we may actually start looking at what would be a sensible future retro. Is that something you want to hear us talk about? Definitely worth a think.
Definitely. Yeah, I was going to say we've certainly got into a lot of detail of what we wanted. But I mean, I suppose as a parting thing before we wrap up with some of our choices, I'm surprised at how late they were. But I guess it goes to show just how much the market's changed. When you could get Mark II Golf GTIs for a couple of grand, nice ones are now 10 grand. And
Yeah.
going back to my 124 E320 estate, a nice one of them's now 8 grand. It's just it's interesting what £5,000 gets you these days. It's you certainly have to be a bit shrewder and, you know, a bit more willing to think outside the box in terms of, you know, what you'd actually want and what's actually sensible and affordable.
Yeah, I mean, is retro a sliding scale? Are these cars now a lot newer? Or is it just inflation that's making this hobby an absolute nightmare?
I think so. I mean, you look at a 3210 from the noughties, that's considered retro these days, especially when you plonk it next to an iPhone 14 or whatever latest iPhones are, or Samsung Galaxy. But things like an iPod, you know, are they retro? But that's... I suppose we can talk about contemporary moving retros another time, but yeah.
One thing's for sure, a Nokia 3210 is going to be a more stout investment than any of the things we've probably suggested. So on that bombshell.
We're going to call it a day. Thank you so much, Tommy, as always.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening, folks. See us on the next time. Catch you all later.
Take care, guys. Bye now.